from their tuition.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is May 22nd. We have a few bills to work today, all Senate bills, of course, so we're going to proceed down the agenda. I will note just early, we're still waiting on some paperwork for Senate Bill 613, so we're going to wait on that at least temporarily and see if we get the paperwork before we finish here today. So we'll start with Senate Bill 16, open a public hearing. Mr. Salvaggio, if you want to join us while Troy gives us a summary, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 16 deletes limitation on reappointment of members of Oregon Investment Council.
Thank you. Mr. Salvaggio.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salvaggio from the State Treasurer's Office, and the committee minister to give a very succinct explanation of what the bill does, and I'll just give you some brief history and answer questions. Back in 2005, the various comings and goings and, of the Oregon Investment Council raised the attention of some legislators who passed Senate Bill, and they have this on hand,
302.
And what that bill did was made various changes to the Oregon Investment Council. The bulk of those changes dealt with public records and made some technical cleanup to the statutes. In addition to those changes was a limit on Investment Council member terms. Currently, each Investment Council member serves four-year terms. They're appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate, and Senate Bill 302 in 2005 limited them to two each. What we'd like to do with Senate Bill 16 is remove just that provision of Senate Bill 302. We have the public records provision still intact. As a matter of fact, we've made great strides in recording those meetings, getting those online for people. So I think that that was a positive move forward. With regard to the intention generally of 302, the stated intention in 205 was to keep experienced people in those positions, and that was as stated to the committee back then. We would submit to the committee now that that particular portion of Senate Bill 302 has not lived up to that intent, and we wish to repeal just that little bit with Senate Bill 16. We have a situation now in which term limits, or I should say terms of Investment Council members have become unstaggered as people leave before their terms are completely up, and we're coming to a point where we're looking at a quorum of the entire council leaving within the same year. And we don't want to see that kind of expertise and institutional knowledge leave all at the same time. We think that there ought to be turnover, but it ought to be done in a measured, planned out way as opposed to on some arbitrary timeline. So we ask that you move Senate Bill 16 out with a due pass recommendation, and I'll ask if you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Salvaggio? We're setting a precedent here with this. we're gonna move through our bills very quickly today, I think. That's the only person, you are the only person who signed up to testify on Senate Bill 16. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard? I don't see any. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 16 and open a work session on Senate Bill 16. Representative Betts?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 16 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. I'm going to stall for a moment. Representative Benz has moved Senate Bill 16 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Senate Bill 16 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And unless anyone else is itching to carry it, I'll be happy to do that. I'll carry Senate Bill 16, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 16. As I mentioned, we're going to skip Senate Bill 613 for the moment, waiting on the fiscal impact statement, and also Senate Bill 615. So we'll go to the work session on Senate Bill 178, open the work session, and ask Troy to give us a refresher, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 178 authorizes Director of Department of Aviation to impose civil penalties for violations of aviation laws, rules, and orders, declares emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you. We have the director is here. There he is. Any questions for him? We can have additional conversation or refreshment if we need on the bill. Don't see any. So we are in work session. Representative Benz.
Mr. Chairman, move Senate Bill 178 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz has moved Senate Bill 178 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Senate Bill 178 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Need a carrier.
Okay.
Representative Lively will carry. Thank you very much. Close the work session on Senate Bill 178 and open the work session on Senate Bill 181. Trotman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 181 extends minimum term of loans made from water fund from 25 to 30 years.
Very simple. We've heard this this bill as well. Any discussion on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 181 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz has moved Senate Bill 181 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Senate Bill 181 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We need a carrier here as well. Representative Benz is a former member of the Water Board.
Happy to be
fantastic. Representative Benz will carry. I hope you'll get a similar result as happened in the Senate where it passed unanimously. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 181 and open a work session on Senate Bill 276. Mr. Campbell, the moment you've been waiting for. Can you give us a summary?
Sure. Please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 276, direct Secretary of State to conduct financial audit review of monies collected, borrowed, received, and expended by Travel Information Council, provides the Secretary of State may contract with an independent certified public accountant to conduct the review or accept the financial review conducted by an independent certified public accountant.
Thank you. And Mr. Campbell, you have an amendment.
Damen und Herren, guten Tag, mit dem ist Craig Campbell. Ich bin hier im Namen der Oregon Travel Experience. Ich bin hier, um Anders und Stragen zu unterstützen. Good afternoon, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Travel Experience in support of the underlying bill and the Dash 1 amendments, which make one minor change to the bill. It changes the majority requirement for meeting quorum for the council, the Oregon Travel Information Council, from currently 6 members to a majority of members serving on the council. And that is the entirety of the amendment that is before you. I'm willing to answer any questions you may have within reason.
Happy to have the caveat. Before I recognize Representative Nathan, at the risk of taking your questions, could you explain a little more about the need for this change?
This particular change is currently the Oregon Travel Information Council has 12 members. We will be seeing some attrition over time, and because there is an unusual provision in statute that requires 6 members to be a quorum, whereas that is not usually the case. This comes back from the very old law when it was passed initially as a result of the Lady Bird Johnson Act, when there was, let's say, a lack of trust about the positioning of signs in the state of Oregon. And so it was felt necessary to dictate the number of members necessary for a quorum. We changed the number of members or how the members were differentiated during the 2012 February session. However, we didn't think to change this one provision. And as we have attrition, if we're waiting for folks to be reappointed to those positions and there's vacancies, it could prevent the Travel Information Council from carrying on its business. And so I've been asked to bring this amendment forward to address that issue.
So just to break that down even further, with 12 members, when there is a vacancy or vacancies in some of those positions, the majority doesn't float downward. It remains 6. So if you had only 8 people serving at various times, you'd still need to have 6, and that's a problem, potentially a problem for getting a meeting together. Is that
Mr. Right? Chair, members of the committee, that is exactly right.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
Point of personal privilege, Mr. Chair.
State your point.
In previous hearings, we received information in French, not in German. Is this changing the process?
I think, Representative Nathanson, that Mr. Campbell was just trying to demonstrate his inclusiveness, but perhaps he'd be willing to restate in French for you.
Madam Chair, Representative Nathanson, I am, of course, willing to follow the needs of the committee in whatever language is necessary.
Oh, whatever, careful, whatever language.
It will not be correct, of course, but I will do my best.
We have a pretty diverse committee up here. You might get some other suggestions. Is there additional discussion? Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, aber nein, gut Deutsch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, ja, ich spreche nicht Deutsch.
I'm going to say follow.
Jo tolle svenska.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Very good. Nice to have this capacity for a good time. Any other discussion? Any other languages? So we're in work session.
I know Irish, but I don't think I can speak the words.
Representative Doherty, I imagine you could probably do some sign language in Irish, but we'll keep that for another occasion, perhaps. Representative Metz, the dash ones, I think.
Yes. Mr. Chair, move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 276, dated 5-17-13.
Thank you. Representative Benson has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 276. He's leaving. Dated 5-17-13. Is there any discussion of the amendments? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Benson.
Chair, move Senate Bill 276 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benson has moved Senate Bill 276 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Senate Bill 276 is the floor with the pass recommendation as amended. Can you carry it? Anyone like to carry? Oh. Uh-oh. Cameron, the enthusiasm is palpable. I appreciate it.
I'm ashamed.
Representative Cameron will carry. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 276. And we're back to Senate Bill 615, correct?
Or 615.
Somebody
let's see. Kathy's checking. Nothing yet.
We might have to carry on.
Okay. Well, let's open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 615. We'll keep an eye open. Kathy will let us know if we get the paperwork on Senate Bill 613. Otherwise, we will carry that over. So open a public hearing on Senate Bill 615.
Troy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 613A requires vehicle dealer applying for renewal of vehicle dealer certificate complete minimum 4 years of approved continuing education, specifies applicants may not repeat course in which applicant has already obtained credit.
Did we open 613 or 615?
615.
Yes. My apology. I'll retract what I just said and start over.
We'll remember it when we open Senate Bill 615.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Senate Bill 615 prohibits Department of Transportation from imposing civil penalty on person holding the vehicle dealer certificate in a situation where a person fails to submit notice of sale of vehicle to department.
Thank you. And Mr. Fuller and Ms. Joyce.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association. I'll tee up the original intent of the bill just a little bit, but we'll leave most of the details to the expert that's with me. When you buy a car, legal ownership transfers when the title transfers. And until that title is transferred by DMV, the previous owner actually still legally owns the vehicle and is responsible for anything that happens to it. DMV created a form, it's called a 6890 form, that allows somebody who's selling a vehicle to notify DMV that they have sold the vehicle, even though the title hasn't transferred yet. And that form allows the seller to alleviate themselves from certain kinds of liability, tow bills, parking tickets, things like that. They still legally own the vehicle until that title transfers, but it allows DMV to flag the file, and if a parking ticket comes in, they can send it to the new owner instead of the existing owner. There is no penalty for not filing a 6890, because the only purpose of the form is to protect the seller. So if you don't want to protect yourself, you don't have to. But the form was created for that purpose. And the statute requires you to complete the form within 10 days. One of the questions that I think maybe you guys will grapple with just a little bit is, so if I file the form 12 days, after I sell the vehicle. Does that mean the form doesn't protect me or does it protect me? Because I've not met the statute because I've not done it within 10 days, but yet I've still filed the form to let them know who the new owner is. So there's no penalty. That form is used by both dealers and in private party sales. And so it's not a consumer-only form or a dealer-only form. It's for anybody that sells a vehicle and the title has not yet transferred. The reason why we brought the bill forward originally is that since there is no penalty for not completing the form, and since the only purpose of the form is to protect the dealer or the person who sold the vehicle, we did not think that a dealer should be penalized for not filing that form. And there is a catch-all statute in the vehicle code that if a motor vehicle dealer violates any part of the code, they can get a fine up to $1,000 for any purpose. And so we were simply trying to exempt the 6890 form from that $1,000 catch-all statute because we didn't believe a dealer should be given a fine for not filling out a paperwork that whose only purpose is to protect themselves. In discussions with DMV, we've agreed not to move forward with the bill because it has other purposes, and the 6890 form has other purposes, and we understand why they want to have that ability to create the fine. But in discussions with the chair, we had sort of an interesting conversation on, again, whether or not the form would be valid after 10 days or not, and whether the form is being utilized in the way it ought to be. And so at that point, I contacted DMV, and I'll pass the buck from here on out.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce.
Chair Reed and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, today representing the DMV. So as Mr. Fuller indicated, dealers and individuals are required to submit notice to DMV that a vehicle's been sold. For a private party, the law provides this sort of civil or criminal exemption. If you've submitted that form and you have signed over the title to the buyer, parking tickets, tow bills, that sort of thing can be taken care of because you've indicated to DMV that vehicle's been sold, you no longer own it. And DMV does regulate auto dealers and several other vehicle-related businesses. And in that capacity, investigates them, make sure their paperwork is up to date, that kind of thing. Dealers act as DMV's agent in some situations, issuing plates and that sort of thing. And so it is the fact that for any violation of the code, a dealer can be sanctioned. And one of the possible sanctions is the civil penalty. It's been, from what we can tell, it's been alleged once in all of our history, and then it was negotiated away. So it's not a pressing kind of a problem. But in terms of the enforcement of the submission of this form, there is no enforcement ability for the private party. And for dealers, as the statute does say, you're supposed to submit it within 10 days. How does DMV enforce that against dealers, or how do they look at it? It's a relatively common occurrence that when DMV's regulators go out to dealers and check on their paperwork and that sort of thing, they'll find an instance or two of somebody who hasn't submitted the form at all. And in that situation, it's, hey, you need to be submitting these forms. It's an education kind of a situation. Again, because Mr. Fuller indicated that the bulk of the reason for that is it protects the seller. In terms of the civil release, that's up to the court to decide. If someone were to get a parking ticket, it's not up to DMV to say this person should get out of the parking ticket or not. That's up to a court to decide and how that would be interpreted. If the form got submitted at 12 days rather than 10, or 6 months rather than 10 days, if it came in before the parking ticket got issued, again, that's up for the court to decide, but one can imagine what they reasonably might do. So I think that's sort of the situation we're in. And the question that was posed to me as well from the chair.
Any questions? Representative
Levy. It protects the seller. The dealers, in some cases, are the sellers. So if they don't file it, I guess I'm still they're not protected, but what they're not protected from is parking tickets or that. Or if something happened to the car, I'm a little confused if they bought a new car and it's licensed and registered to that owner. By not filing this form, there's no title that indicates, I don't understand the, by not filing the form, what's missing, and I understand it could still be the dealer's liable for what happens. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Lively, this wouldn't be in the case of the purchase of a new vehicle for the most part. This would mostly be in the purchase of a used vehicle. So we have a title.
Okay.
I sell a car to you, whether I'm a dealer or an individual, so I sign over the title and give it to you. You're legally required to take that title to DVV within 30 days.
Is that correct?
Within 30 days and transfer it in your name. If you don't do it within that 30 days, or even if you do, the 6890 allows me as the seller to say, I don't trust you, so I'm going to fill this form out and protect myself until that title gets there.
Okay. Thank you.
So it's in the interim.
Yeah.
Questions? The thing that's interesting for me is just sort of how, if the legislature has a role in clarifying the effect of the 6890, did I get the number right, after the 10 days, the effectiveness, and whether there's a need for a penalty to continue the incentive to get it done within 10 days if it's still, if we decided that it was still going to be valid post 10 days, making that, if we decided to make that clear. Have any comment on that, Ms. Joyce?
Chair Reed, I guess in terms of the civil liability piece, you know, if you were interested in making sure the courts did one thing versus another, I can tell you I don't know that I've ever heard a complaint from anyone that a court, you know, did something they shouldn't have done. I haven't gotten a call from a member on something like that. But certainly that would be your purview. Again, I sort of described to you how DMV enforces this. It's, you know, you need to turn these forms in, and not in all but one case that we were able, Mr. Fuller and I were able to find out about. It hasn't risen to the level of any kind of sanction other than you need to get these forms in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I'm clear on what was just said, so someone comes, my son, for example, and he decides to sell his car to a friend, and they sign the title over. My son hands the title to the friend, and the friend also takes, let's say, a bill of sale for whatever reason, and hands my son the money. They ignore this requirement. The buyer of the car takes a month to get around to going down to DMV to get the title changed. What happens as a result of not having filed with the department in that situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, my understanding is your son still owns that vehicle. So if the purchaser were to, for example, get a flat tire or the engine was to be blown while he was driving down the freeway, so he just leaves the car there, the engine is blown, I can't afford to tow it, so I'm just going to leave it. The police would get a tow truck to come tow it, and your son would be responsible for paying the tow bill and getting it out of storage because he would still legally own the vehicle. And so, where the 10-day rule gets kind of interesting, if I sell it to you, for example, Representative Benz, if I sell a vehicle to you, and I realize maybe 2 months later, I start getting a bunch of parking tickets, so I come to realize that you never transferred the title in my name like you were supposed to, and I still legally own the vehicle, I may want to file that 6890 now that it's 60 days later. Maybe I wasn't aware of the form, or maybe I didn't think it was that important. Well, now I know the person I sold the vehicle to is out there doing some stupid things with it, so I may want to file that 6890, and under those circumstances, I certainly would want it to be legally valid, even though the statute requires me to do it in 10 days. So one of the options that the legislature would have would be to eliminate the 10-day requirement, and any time you file it, it would be effective, because I would guess that the only purpose for the 10-day rule is to try to convince people to do it quickly. But if they, you know, or I suppose the statute could say you have to do it within 10 days, but if you don't, it's still okay, or you could say after 10 days it's no longer valid if it's filed. as a, again, an enticement to get people to do it quickly, but then, as I said, in the circumstances where somebody finds out later on that the title was never transferred when it was supposed to be, I would certainly think you'd want to provide those people with an opportunity to try to protect themselves at least to some degree. But there still is substantial liability as long as that title is in the name of the original owner.
Representative Fitz.
Well, this is going to be a surprise to many folks that I work with because I don't think any of us had in mind the degree of alacrity that we would have to act with to avoid that liability. So I'm surprised because am I completely off base that the fact that a bill of sale has moved to this person that bought the quad car from my son and the title's been signed off, it still somehow belongs to my son. Is that what you're telling me?
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Reed and Representative Bence, I might disagree a bit with Mr. Fuller in that, you know, it's probably going to, could be end up being for a court to decide because you've got this title that's been signed over to, you know, Bobby, and he's holding a bill of sale from your son, and he's holding that. Does your son still own the car? You know, that's a question of ownership, despite what's been recorded with DMV. You know, the statute provides for this release of civil and criminal liability if your son has sent in that form. But if you get down to ownership, you know, you may end up in court trying to figure out who owns that vehicle if you're talking about a big price tag.
I may follow up. So the person who buys it from my son promptly calls his insurance agent and says, cover me. And the insurance agent says, he will give you a verbal binder, you're covered. That insurance agent isn't going to assume that that car still belongs to my son. At least that's been my experience. They're going to say, do you have the title? Yes. And when are you going to get moved over? I don't know. Well, am I insured? And they'll say, yes, you are. And so I'm curious about this because we haven't been holding, we haven't been telling people that they still own the car after they've gone through those hoops. In due course, those titles get transferred, but we don't zoom around with as fast as we can and then wait by the mailbox for the transferred title to come back. I guess I'm hearing we should be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, I can tell you from the time when I represented the New Car Dealers Association where dealers were sometimes not as quick at getting the DMV paperwork to DMV as they should when selling used cars, that there have been, and maybe the rare exception, but I can remember having conversation with dealers where even though they'd sold the vehicle, the vehicle was still, they still had an ownership interest in the vehicle because it hadn't been transferred, where they were held liable in some cases for certain damages. And I think that probably happens, and whether or not that's the exception or the rule, I can't tell you, but I can tell you when you ask DMV about who owns a vehicle, they will tell you that the person who's on the title is the primary document they use for ownership. So if you're still on that title and a new one hasn't been produced, I think Ms. Joyce is right, the court may end up having to make that decision, but it may not be the decision you want them to make.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Fuller, I guess I'm just a little confused as to what the problem is we're trying to solve. If it's the testimony of both of you that one of these penalties has literally never been enforced.
So let me break in a little bit here. Yeah. What I understood, the original intent of the bill, the proponents have decided does not need to go forward. When it was described to me, I kind of narrowed in on this question about the form. So okay. I wanted to bring it to the committee and let the committee wrestle with it a little bit. We might very well decide that we don't need to take any further action on it, but given that it was, at least to me, an interesting question, and we had the capacity, given the other things that we're that we don't have in the committee, I want to let people have a chance to talk about it. If we decide that's the end of it, that's fine, too.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay. Not surprisingly, you two are the only ones. Nope. We have someone else who wants to testify. Thank you both.
Chair Reed,
Representative
McEwen. While we're changing witnesses, I'll just add a little anecdotal piece.
Sure.
My grandmother gave my cousin in about 1965 a 1949 Chevrolet, which he hauled down to California where he lived to have some fun with as a high school student. And about 30 years later, my dad got a phone call from the California Department of Motor Vehicles about a vehicle that was abandoned on the side of the freeway in somewhere around Los Angeles. And the title had never been changed, and they tracked it down to my dad 25 years later.
Good reminder about how important
it is. So strange things can happen. And my dad ended up being, because he was the heir of the estate, and he ended up being responsible for the removal of the vehicle.
Things can add up, can't they?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, okay. Recommending Mr. Lincoln, the President of Oregon Vehicle Dealer Association. This is the third time I put a bill in about this form. So I kind of am like the expert back through history on it. We took off the requirement for a signature, for instance, the first time, because nobody ever got a signature. Remember, Representative Lundquist, who was, while he was Speaker, gave his dad's pickup to a wrecker who sold it out the back door into Washington. It got towed. The tow operator sued him for the storage and towing charges for about $1,200. Okay, because he never submitted a 6890 in the notice of sale. So it can make a huge difference to people. A couple points I guess I just wanted to make was there's all kinds of deadlines at DMV. Why a 10-day? I have no idea. You have 30 days to process title on behalf of an owner if you're doing the paperwork for a customer. You have 25 days to give somebody a title if you're just handing title over to the customer when you're selling it. Why do you have to tell the state at 10 days that you're going to give the title if it's 25 days? I don't know. Consignment law is 10 days to pay off. If you trade a vehicle into a dealer, he has 15 days to pay off. There's all kinds of deadlines, and I don't know why there's a 10-day. I've never heard of a reason. So certainly that could be changed. The intent of this bill was to not make dealers second-class citizens on the notice of sale. Why should they be punished for not putting one in when nobody else is? If a vehicle comes into the state with a Washington title, you don't do a 6890 if you sell it to somebody else with a bill of sale. If a vehicle comes into the state as a brand new vehicle, when the dealer sells it to a customer, you don't do a notice of sale. You only do a notice of sale if it has been titled in the state of Oregon with an Oregon title. So there's well over half of the vehicles it doesn't even apply to. And then only a few people really it applies to on the 10-day because they were dealers. Now, my understanding is DMV came told us this after we passed the Senate. They're using the 6890 as a tool to go after illegal dealers. That's a valid use of it. Okay, but I don't know about the 10 days. I don't know why we would have to do the 10 days, but, you know, I'm willing to go along with them and study it, too. I think it's a good idea. There's other things you should be looking at. Why is an odometer not reported to DMV when it's changed, no matter what year it is? Why is a payment on a consignment mixed in with all the other money a dealer has? I don't know these questions. I don't know the answers. I don't even know the definition of a consignment, and I've been doing this for 25 years. Nobody will answer my questions. There's some other questions up here. But I just wanted to get it on the record of...
Thank you. We appreciate the testimony. Any other comments? I think what we'll do probably is close the public hearing, and we'll have a little conversation offline to see if we need to do anything else with this bill. We'll carry it over to our next meeting in case we discover that we have an opportunity to do something. Kathy, anything on 613? Okay, so we'll need to carry 613 over to our next meeting as well. I don't expect that there's going to be a lot of difficulty with that, but we'll wait for that paperwork so that we have the hearing and discussion about it at the same time as we have the paperwork and can likely move it at that point. That's the extent of our agenda for today. Is there anything else to come before the committee? And we are not meeting on Friday. correct, Troy?
Correct. So, or Monday.
Or Monday, which is Memorial Day. So enjoy your holiday, and we'll see you a week from today, correct?
Correct.
Very good. I think that's it. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.